G'day everybody, welcome back to the Birder's Guide. Now, normally we would talk about some birding, but before we're going to get into birding, I have a slight apology. It's a very slight apology. In fact, it might not even be an apology, but nonetheless. Everybody says that listening to your own voice is a bit awkward, and I would tend to agree with that. However, when I do these podcast episodes, I listen to each one three times eventually. So we record the episode, which is, doesn't count, and then I edit the episode so that anything, like for example, I just did a huge big pause there and a cough and someone walked in my office and needed me to help with them and you have no idea. So edit them, cut all of the stuff out that makes no sense. And then once I've edited it, I listen to it through again to make sure that I didn't miss anything, because sometimes when you're cutting things out, you can gloss over some stuff. And then a fortnight later, when I go to do the next one, I listen to it again just to see what we were talking about and where we're at and if there's anything that's relevant to the next conversation, etc. So, during the course of this podcast, I have listened to my own voice for about 50 hours. So by now, I know exactly what I sound like to everybody else. However, in saying that, I listened to the chat that I did with Mike Potter a fortnight ago, and I was didn't sound very good, I didn't think. Was a bit flat, not very enthusiastic. But I will say, and I will unashamedly put that down to the fact that I was getting over a bout of horrendous gastro. I haven't been that sick for a long time. In fact, I'm pretty sure the last time I felt that sick was when I had malaria back in 2011. And I was so sick then, I was fairly certain I was going to die. In fact, so certain I was going to die that I actually have a video on my computer, I think, somewhere that I recorded while I was lying in bed dying. Recorded it for my family. I'm pretty sure nobody's seen it, but that's how certain I was that when I went to sleep, there's a fairly high chance that I wasn't going to be waking up again. Anyway, malaria is not much fun. So I was very sick 2 weeks ago. Spent 17 hours throwing up every 30 minutes. Not much fun. But luckily I was the last one, and so me and my wife weren't both horrendously sick at the same time that our children were. We sort of spaced it out pretty nicely, so that was good. Anyway, that's beside what we're talking about today, but nonetheless, I was, in case anyone was like, ooh, Michael's sounding a bit odd, that's why. I was getting over a sickness. Now, birding. Anyone done any in the last fortnight? Here, I've done a little bit. I've sort of got three sort of spaces that are within maybe 10 minutes drive of home, which is only for a little while because we actually bought a house this week. Yes, thank you. So, yes, we've bought a house in Balaclava in the town. I think we're supposed to be moving next weekend. But currently, where we live currently, there are three spots nearby that I go birding. So there's the Owen Wetlands, which is a man-made, just a small wetland. Takes you, if you walked without birding, it would take you maybe 5 minutes to walk around it. It's very small, but it's quite good. It's nice. It walks along the golf course. If you want to continue walking, the Owen Township have I think it's about 4 kilometers, a walk which just goes around the town. There's a nice few patches of scrub which have blue-winged parrots, elegant parrots, red-rumped parrots, just the usual stuff. Probably blue-winged parrots are probably the claim to fame of those little spots. But anyway, it's a nice little thing. One of the things I really like about eBird is the fact that it keeps track of what you've seen in particular council regions. So the Wakefield Regional Council is my region. And so I've got sort of three lists: the Wakefield Regional Council, South Australia, Australia, Life. So that's four lists. And so my Wakefield, let's have a look. One of the beauties of editing things is I can just stop, have a look at what my eBird list is, and then cut out however long it took me to figure that out. 151. My Wakefield list is 151, which is nearly 50 species in front of the next person on eBird. But I don't actually know how many people there would be. There is 99 Oh, no, there are 100. So there's at least 100 people. Anyway, I got my first white-naped honey eater at the Owen Wetlands. That's what I remember most. Anyway, there's the Owen Wetlands. Then there's the Rocks Reserve at Balaclava, which is good fun. I think I hold the... Yes, so I hold the record for the most species at the Rocks Reserve at 61. There's only 4 people that have put records in there, so don't cheer too loudly. 68 species and I've seen 61, so not too many more to find. But I think from memory the 7 that I'm missing are unlikely to turn up very regularly. But that's fine. So, the Rocks Reserve. What have I seen there that's of interest? We've got, every now and then you see Nankin night herons, which is a bit unusual. Actually saw a Nankin night heron at the Owen Wetlands recently. Peregrine falcons fly over. I actually saw, now this is very interesting, a shout out to Swarovski Optic for their NL pupils that they gave me. I was out there birding with them. That was the first place I went with them, actually, once I got them. And I was just standing on top of the hill looking out into the distance. And I thought, oh, I wonder what I can see out there. Anyway, I put these binoculars up to my eyes and just looked out at a random patch of sky, and I could see well enough to identify without hesitation a brown falcon harassing a Nankin kestrel and having a good crack at it. And they would, I don't know, they must have been fighting over something. But anyway, it was too far away for me to tell what they were fighting over, but I could definitely tell that they were there. Took my binoculars down, couldn't see a thing. Couldn't even tell you that there were birds, even when I knew what I was looking for. So that was cool. Anyway, peregrine falcons, I've seen a spotted crake there. It's the only crake I've seen or heard there, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, and then I've also got a patch of scrub near our farm. So I don't live there. We live about 10 minutes away, but we got a patch of scrubs, about 100 hectares, hilly country. I put a post up on SA Birding, or South Aussie Birding. I was like, that's not what it's called. South Aussie Birding up on Facebook once. I don't know if anyone would remember it, but I put a picture of a plane on there because one flew over from the Air Force. But anyway, we've got, I think my species list is up to about 88 there. One claim to fame is about 6 or 7 years ago. No idea, actually. But 6 or 7 years ago, there was like an eruption of black honey eaters down near Adelaide. And I'm fairly certain that I found the first one further south than what its normal range is in our scrub. So that was cool. That was, I remember hearing something and thinking, oh, that's, I don't know what that is. Tracked it down and found this tiny little black honey eater. So that was cool. And then I think the next year I found a family of orange chats on the summer track that leads up into the hills. So that was also quite interesting. You know, you see these things where they're not supposed to be, and it takes you a few seconds to get your head around the fact that you're looking at an orange chat where you would definitely not expect to see one. Anyway, that has been a 10-minute ramble that I didn't expect. Nonetheless, I didn't really have much else to say, to be honest. I would quite like to, at the start of each year, chat to everybody who is doing a big year. It's a good way to get to learn about some of the birders that are out there and doing things, and it's always interesting to know. And then at the start of the year, you can follow along, join their Facebook page or whatever you want to do, and follow along and see what happens. So anyway, you'll remember that when I was talking to Mike about a fortnight ago, or actually exactly a fortnight ago, I said that I knew someone was doing one in WA, but wasn't sure. I thought they'd started halfway through the year. I won't go into it. We talk about it in the episode, but I got Jeff on, who is currently doing a WA big year. Now, I've said all of that way too early. So normally I get to the end of my first spiel and then I do my little intro song. Shout out to my sister who created that for me. And then I talk about the guests that we're having on, and then we talk to the guests. And I've just done my spiel before I've done my intro, and I'm fairly sure I didn't put anything in there which would make that transition easy. So we're just going to skip that bit this time. I'll put the song in very shortly, and then we'll cut straight to our conversation with Jeff. Unfortunately, I can't blame that on my gastro. That's just that's just me getting excited about telling you all my local birding spots and forgetting how I'm supposed to do the show. Anyway, that's all I really had to say. There hasn't been any birds reported, I don't think, in the last fortnight that haven't been hanging around for a little while. So there's nothing really to report there. So that's about it. So let's get straight into our conversation.
You're listening to The Birder's Guide with Michael Greenshutz.
So, Jeff, welcome to The Birder's Guide. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks very much.
Now, I did a podcast a fortnight ago with Mike Potter, who is doing a big year in South Australia. And I said at the time that I knew someone was doing one in WA, but I thought for some reason that you'd started halfway through the year, but someone messaged me and corrected me, so I thought I better get you on too. I think you two guys are the only ones doing big years publicly, so you're not doing yours in South Australia, you're in WA. Have you lived in Western Australia your whole life?
I have, yeah. Well, bar 1 year when I worked in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Do you still... Well, what did you do over there?
I'm a recently retired nuclear physician, and I did my last year of training in nuclear medicine in Ann Arbor in Michigan.
So what does a nuclear physician do?
I'm a bit like a radio... Well, I was. I'm fully retired now. I've handed in my medical license, so... I was a bit like a radiologist, but instead of passing x-rays through you to take pictures, we used to label chemicals with radioactive substances that would allow us to take pictures of physiologic processes in the body, so we can investigate just about every disease that is known to man and get some cool pictures of it and hopefully be of service to the doctors who are requesting the tests to investigate all sorts of things, cancer being the predominant one, I would say.
Yeah. And were you always interested in going down the medical field ever since school?
Not necessarily, no. I actually thought I was going to be an optometrist, but things changed along the way, and I ended up doing medicine because my best mate was doing medicine, and then I started studying as a physician because one of my mates at the time was studying to be a physician, and I started training as a neurologist and hated it, and put my name down not to put a relieving roster, and nuclear medicine was one of the first ones I did, and I got stuck, and one of the best decisions I ever made was to continue in that field.
There you go. So peer pressure basically got you to where you are now.
Yeah, I think a series of accidents, really.
So are you based in Perth in WA?
Yes, I am.
Yep. And has Perth always been your home?
I was born in Bunbury, but lived almost all of my life in Perth.
Yep. So you live in WA, you spent a year in Michigan, you work in the medical field. At what point... in that journey, did you get into birding?
I was thinking about this over the last few weeks and in preparation for our chat. And really, you know, I kept budgies and quail as a kid. And then I didn't really think about birding very much at all, although I had a Simpson and Day in the library, and I did refer from time to time during my 20s and 30s, but I played a lot of tennis in my 40s, and I had a big fall in 2005 and significantly injured my knee. And during my recuperation, I rediscovered the birds when I was going insane, not being able to play tennis. I went bushwalking, and that led to looking at the birds, and then it became a passion and then a bit of an obsession.
I heard a saying once that said, you know you're getting old when you no longer fell over, but you rather had a fall.
I was at full stretch on the backhand and playing on a slippery, wet surface, and I fell. So I think that I probably was still, I wasn't yet old. It was just one of those accidents.
Yeah. So you got into birding when you were 40, is that what you said?
45 was when I really started getting particularly interested.
We've only seen each other for about 15 seconds on the screen, but you don't look that old. So did you sort of go into birding pretty hard, or did it take you a while to warm up to it?
I still consider I'm really just an intermediate birder, and I don't know that I'm going to get very much better. I've got early cataracts and I'm slightly deaf in one ear, so I've got a few things going to get really good at birding, but I have persistence, and I think that's my main quality when it comes to having decided to do a big year. While others have got much greater skills than I have, I reckon that I've got more persistence than most people have.
Yeah. So what made you actually decide to do a big year? Have you been planning it for long?
A couple of things. The movie, The Big Year, and I thought, wow, that's a cool thing to do. And then I used Frank O'Connor's website. I don't know whether you've seen his WA birding website, but a very extensive and very useful website for beginning and intermediate birders. And as part of that, I started looking at other sites, and I saw that Alan Collins had published a couple of blogs on his big year from 2015, and that really spurred me on. I thought, well, that's a really interesting thing to do. I'm a city slicker. I've never seen much of Western Australia, and it would be a great opportunity when I retire to combine seeing a lot of WA with my passion, which is birding. And so that's how it sort of gradually developed. And over the last 5 years, I've been a bit by bit making plans, and I plan to do it when I turn 62. I was going to retire when I turn 62, but the last couple of years of work, I've found that I wasn't quite as enthusiastic about work, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to retire early. So I took the opportunity and retired last year. I bought a Ford Ranger utility and a Trayon camper van got it made in Brisbane. I retired on the 26th of March last year. The plan was to fly over on the 27th and pick up my van and drive it across the top of Australia in preparation for this year. And of course, COVID hit and everything changed.
Have you done much birding around Australia?
No, I haven't. I think my Australian list is somewhere around about the 440 mark. So,
So you're not the standard sort of big year birder, I suppose.
Absolutely not.
Why did you choose just to do WA versus doing an Australian big year?
I've always been someone who wanted to beat records. Yep. So I looked at the Australian record and thought, that's an impossibility. And then I looked at the Western Australian record and I thought, yeah, I can probably have a crack at that. So it was really about seeing if I could actually beat a record. And I knew that there'd be no way that John Weagle's record would, you know, for someone with without the unlimited fund, that would be possible to make inroads on that record. So I thought I'd have a crack at Alan Collins's record.
Before I ask you about Alan's record, I was thinking about this after I did my interview with Mike, and I thought, is it possible to do a whole, if you had unlimited funds and unlimited connections, could you see every species on mainland Australia in 1 year? And then I looked at John's, he did a blog or something or other, and he said he got every single mainland species except night parrot and buff-breasted button quail. And I was like, that is very impressive to just miss two species, yeah, in 1 year. So anyway, going back to the WA record, what is the record?
419.
And how much planning and preparation has gone into your year so far?
I've done a lot of reading. I've done a lot of itinerary making and a lot of itinerary changing. And I ended up deciding that I would spend the first 3 months of the year just collecting the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Any vagrant that turned up, I would go for. And then I hope to have only 70 or so birds left by the end of that 3 months, and then I'm going to study hard for a month or so and then make a firm itinerary and go after the last 70.
Yeah.
So that's the
plan. So have you got, I think they're summer ones, the honey buzzard and Eurasian hobby. Are they on your list yet?
The honey buzzard was simple, first attempt. I've spent 20 hours on the Eurasian hobby. Each of the last 4 years, I've got it within about 4 hours of looking. I haven't got it this time, and it just hasn't been seen for 3 weeks. So I think that one is going to be one that has escaped, alas.
That's unfortunate. Is who has the old record? Did you say Alan? Was that his?
Alan Collins.
Yeah, he. I don't suppose he would have the Eurasian hobby on his list anyway. Would he be before that one's time?
No, but he got some really top birds that I, as an intermediate birder, you know, if an Asian house martin flew over my field of view for 2 seconds,
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to identify it. So for me, the birds that are, even if I saw them, I wouldn't be prepared to tick just mm-hmm. because of my experience.
Yeah. So in the first, you said COVID caused you issues picking up your car and whatnot, but has it caused many issues? What are we now, 10th Feb, in the first 5 weeks of your trip? I mean, WA's pretty strict on their COVID lockdowns and keep people out.
Other than that, right now I am, having returned to Perth, I can't leave Perth now. For the next 2.5 days, it hasn't affected me at all.
Okay.
It probably will. The number of the Aboriginal communities are still closed, and I suspect that they will remain closed for the entire year. So that may stop me getting to places like Mitchell Falls, which will be a bit mm-hmm. of a disaster. But
yep.
Just have to accept that, given that Des Hume, who did it last year, he was caned by the COVID restrictions and fortunately fell well short of the target.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can't really plan for pandemics when you do these sorts of things. A question I had, I was thinking about some of the harder species to get, and if you ignore sort of, you know, the Mitchell Plateau, black grass wrens and those sorts of things, you've got, WA's got a lot of desert on the east side, eastern part of WA. Are there many species out there that you have to go out there to find, or are they spread out enough that you can get them elsewhere?
The reality is that I may end up not going for the dusky grass wren and the princess parrot mm-hmm. just because it'll take, you know, maybe 10 days out of a year that I could pick up 3 or 4 other birds if I spent the time elsewhere. So those sort of things, I've penciled in a trip, but I also feel that you probably need to go in a convoy, and I don't feel that I could organise it because my schedule will be dependent upon whether vagrants turn up, and I'd hate to organise a trip with, you know, 4 or 5 other people and suddenly say, no, I can't come. So that one is to think about a bit later in the year, I think.
Yeah. Have you managed to find, has anything random turned up in your first 5 weeks?
I'd love to say yes, but the answer is no. I've just spent 5 days whale watching in the hope of picking up, you know, some megas on the water, and I got nothing, which was pretty sad. But I had a great time looking at the whales, that's for sure.
What sort of whales do they get off WA?
So this was the Bremer Bay Canyon, so it's orca season, and the orcas were just awesome. Already, even if I fail miserably in my birding challenge, I've just had the most amazing time.
Do you have any species that you're particularly looking forward to chasing down?
You know, people ask me all the time, you know, what's your favourite bird? And basically my favourite bird is almost always the last bird that I saw. Look, I would love to. I've made a decision to follow the ABA rules, so I don't have to see it, I only have to hear it. But I've modified it a bit that if I tick a bird from a call, I've got to hear it call twice, and I've got to be absolutely certain I know what it is. Preferably, I will have recorded it. And I'd love to hear the night parrot. I'm not sure that I'll get to see it, but I'd certainly love to hear it.
Well, you never know. You could chat to the Adrian Boyles of the world. They might give you a tip to their secret spot where they found some. So you never know.
Yeah, I've had had lunch with Nigel and Adrian up in Broome, but I'm not. I don't want to push them, and the secret spots are secret for a reason. So I've got some good general info, and I'll be having a crack at some likely spots for the night parrot.
Yeah, nice. Well, that will certainly. I don't know if anybody else would have a night parrot on their big year list at all. I don't think so. Good luck. So, of what you've done so far, or what's your number up to now?
I'm up to, as of today, I've just failed in my new bird a day streak. So today is day 41, and alas, I have, even though I've seen a new bird today, I'm not prepared to tick it. So I'm up to 299 as of today.
Tell us about that, because I read your Facebook post about it. So give us the rundown and what you ended up deciding there.
So I came back from Bremer Bay really needing a break, and so I decided to have a break from full-on birding for a week. And so I've just been trying to maintain the getting one new bird a day, and that's been a bit of a fun challenge. And so I started off trying to pick up a great cormorant, which I thought would be a piece of cake, and failed miserably on that on the day that I had targeted that, but ended up getting a painted button quail as my backup bird. And then I got the great cormorant yesterday, and I got some good intel on a collared sparrowhawk from a friend that was going to be today's bird. But alas, there was a nest and there was a chick in the nest, but there's no way I could identify a collared sparrowhawk chick and exclude a brown goshawk chick from 40 metres. So even though I saw the bird, and I know the birder who has been watching this nest is a really good birder and knows that it's a collared sparrowhawk, but my birding ethic dictates that if I can't identify it, either by taking a photo and looking at it carefully, or being sure of its characteristics, I can't tick it. So alas, that one remained unticked, and I spent the rest of the day looking for little grass birds and spotted pardalotes and 20-crowned honeyeaters, and I've come up short. So today's the first day I'm not going to have a bird a day.
You didn't want to just hang around till its parents came back?
I could have done that, but I had a luncheon appointment with my father, which I don't like to miss, when given that I'm not going to be in Perth too often this year. It's nice to catch up with my father, who is in his 91st year, and although he's very sprightly, I like to take as many opportunities to catch up with him as I can.
Mm, yep. you said you've been thinking about doing this. I think you said you were thinking about it for about 5 years or so, and you've obviously put a lot of effort into the plans. What are your plans? Like, what's your if you can condense it, what's your plan for the year, and what have you done so far?
Okay, so I started actually on the 14th of December, and that's maybe why you got the feeling that I'm midway through the year, but that was just to get on the road and get up to Wyndham by the 1st of January to start my big year. I wanted to start it with an hour. I ended up with 14 seconds past midnight getting a Mars lapwing, which was very, very disappointing. It's my first bird for the year. The barking owl did come in as number two. Frank O'Connor joined me for the first few days of the year, and we were specifically targeting the black butcher bird. He got great views of it. I got the reasonable recording and the back end of it as it flew away, just because of the position I was on the boat when it suddenly appeared. But that was pretty exciting to get the black butcher bird on the Wyndham mangroves. And then when Frank flew back to Perth, I've just basically meandered my way down from Wyndham down to Perth. Because I started mid-December and I was going pretty hard at it, I sort of lost my focus a bit coming down, and I missed a few birds that probably I should have got. Missed a couple of the wet weather or the wet season birds that I should have got up in the north, and I'd obviously hope for a cyclone to push in the vagrants, but that didn't happen. So I'm back up for sure into the north for the last couple of weeks of December. So that wasn't planned and has now been a change in my itinerary. And I plan to do two more trips back up north during the year, one in June and probably one in September.
And so apart from that, have you just been birding around Perth for... Or has it taken you 5 weeks to get from Wyndham to Perth?
It's taken me 5 weeks to get. Okay. Basically, well, I had to get from Wyndham all the way down to Bremer Bay to do the 5 days of the pelagic birding. I had planned to stop off at Chains to get the western bristlebird and the noisy scrub bird and the western whip bird on the way home, but we got some awful weather. So I decided to change my plans and just come back to Perth, and I'll have a crack at those birds, even though they're a little bit challenging. I don't see there going to be any difficulty to pick off at some time when I just have 2 or 3 days to get down to Albany to get them picked off. And obviously I've got to do the trip out to the Nullarbor and get the blue bonnet and the quail, Nullarbor quail thrush, and a few inland trips to pick up the inland birds. But really the itinerary I think is going to have to be very flexible because of the vagrants. I will go for anything that turns up, obviously, because you've got to get the 5 or 10 birds that you're not expecting to have any chance of breaking the record, I think.
Yeah, and WA, especially for the last couple of years, has had a bit of a reputation of being where all the vagrants have turned up.
Wouldn't it be great if we had a year like we've had in the last years?
So you said you were hoping that you would have about 70 birds left by the end of January, February, March. So you're currently exactly 50 birds short of that. Do you think you're going to get 50 in the next 7 or 8 weeks?
Well, I've got a pelagic on Sunday. Should get me 2 or 3 new birds. And then I'm getting on a boat to go from Perth up to Exmouth. I'm hoping for maybe 12 birds that I haven't got on that trip. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the 50 is achievable by the end of March.
Yeah, and I mean those the next 70 are not going to be a walk in the park to get them, especially the further through the year you go, I suppose.
Yeah.
I've got one more question for you, and yes. I don't know if you've listened to any other episodes I've done, but I ask this of everyone who comes on the show, and I think you're probably... how do I say this politely? You're probably the least travelled person I've had on the show in terms of birding across the country. But nonetheless, the question is still relevant. Of everywhere that you've been birding in Australia, where is the one spot that you think everybody should go birding at least once in their life?
Without a doubt.
What was that? Can you say that again? You cut out right when you answered it.
Kununurra. So the birding in the north of Western Australia to me was just mind-blowingly beautiful. You know, the Goulian finches and just the rugged countryside. It's just so different to the Perth city that I've grown up in and experienced, you know, very much of the outback. It's just so beautiful, and the you know, seeing purple crowned fairy wrens and seeing the mangrove birds and seeing the finches is just, that will be something I will remember for the rest of my life as just a marvelous experience.
Well, we're going to wrap it up at that. So thank you for giving half an hour of your time. It took us a little while to get there, but I'm glad we did. And all the best with your next, I don't know how many species you've got to go, 120 maybe.
121.
There you go. And yeah, and we'll get you back on the show maybe this time next year and see how you went.
Yeah, Mike and I have got a proportionate bottle of wine on who gets the number that's a bit higher than the previous record. So hopefully I'll get that to meet him and share a bottle of wine with him at some stage.
Is it a good bottle?
It'll if I lose, it'll, and I'm buying the bottle, it'll be a good bottle. I hope Mike's buying the bottle, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, Jeff, and we'll chat to you later.
Good, Michael.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you all have a fantastic fortnight out birding, and I'll speak to you again in a fortnight's time. Until then, happy birding.